Thank you for being here today. Quite often you like to understand exactly what your Chamber of Commerce does for you, and the opportunity to bring our three state-level elected representatives together to talk about the plan that your Chamber of Commerce brings to them for each session. And each year we go to Washington to talk to our congressional representatives. You can go to our website, to the Chamber website, and you can see the 2013 State Legislative Action Plan. There's a hard copy if you like that. But this is what they take to not only our representatives, but all the representatives of the state of Texas, so they can understand what issues are important here in Bryan College Station so that our voice can be heard. When it comes to the Washington situation, it's changed because it used to be, and I'm sure they can tell you stories about how they used to go from this congressional building to this congressional building, trying to catch as many staffers as they possibly could. In the last couple of years, they've had the opportunity to actually sit in a room and have the elected representatives and their staff come to them. We are very fortunate that we are in that situation. But we do get a chance to get the things that are important in Bryan College Station out in front of our elected officials. So that is among the many things your chamber does for you. And if you'd like to be a member of this committee, obviously be in touch with the chamber office, and they'd be glad to let you know how that can happen. Today, basically, what we're going to do is take the major issues that they took in the 83rd Texas Legislature and split them up based on areas of expertise and committee assignments that our representative and senator had. As you heard, and we're going to begin, I think, with health care, Dr. Schwertner is exactly that. He is a physician. He is a fourth-generation pharmacist, too. Is that right?
That's correct.
That's probably an interesting dinner table conversation that you'll have. We'll talk about that. But first, I talked to these guys during the session, and basically, I'd like for each of you to maybe just take a couple of minutes before we start and give us an overview of what you felt like this session was. Senator, we'll start with you, and then we'll move down the line.
Oh, thank you, Scott. Scott, I also want to thank you for raking me over the coals every Wednesday. I appreciate it greatly.
Sure.
Actually, it was a great honor to be able to reach out on your program to the citizens of Brazos Valley and explain where my views were of the issues that were affecting the legislature at that time. It was much appreciated. Royce, thank you for allowing me to come here, and Ben to come talk to the chamber. Thank you all for allowing me to serve you in the Texas Senate. Senator Ogden obviously was someone that y'all knew well. I've tried my best to live up to his integrity and his knowledge base. It's a work in progress as far as the knowledge base. I certainly have a lot to learn, but I feel pretty good after two sessions, one in the House and one in the Senate. Everyone can put their wallets away and their purses, take their hands off their purses. The legislature is done after 207 days, so y'all don't have to worry about us taxing you anymore until hopefully a year and a half from now. The session went very well. I'd like to tell you that the Texas works. The policies that have been put in place over the last 10 years, the regulatory policies, the tax policies, as well as the judicial reform, has been a formula for success. And when you couple that with the oil and gas boom that we're experiencing now, with the increased taxation and revenue from that, That's a great position to be in compared to other states. Texas remains the economic engine and job creator of the United States. We had a very workmanlike type session during the regular session. It got a little more contentious during our three special sessions that we'll talk about here in a little bit, I'm sure. But the issues addressed were the issues I think were important to the people of Texas and the families of Texas, and that is water, roads, schools, and health care. And we made significant progress in all three areas. So with that, I'll let the other individuals speak, and we'll get to the topics.
Great. And let's do that then. State Representative Kyle Cassell. Kyle, obviously a freshman, an eye-opening experience for you. But tell us what that 207 days was for you.
Well, it was obviously a little longer. I'll lead with thank you all for being here. I want to thank the chamber to your leadership in Austin, your willingness to come see us. I know I've had the opportunity to visit with you all many times here, but you know, I'll leave with the joke that we got it wrong. Our forefathers originally intended us to meet every 140 days for two, every 140 years for 2 days. I messed that up bad.
We know what you meant, though.
Absolutely. 207, I didn't know what the count was. It was an honor and privilege to serve you all, to comment on Dr. Schwerdner. We were very successful. It was long. Our time was there. I was honored to be there. I knew what I signed up for. Glad to be there fighting for each and every one of you every day. But transportation, water, education, health care were on the top of all three of our lists. I mean, those four topics. And it took us a while, but we got there. We were very successful. I know when Clint introduced me, he told you about the five counties that I represent. So you also, if you are not aware of it, I was very blessed to have a very rural district, but at the same time learned quite a bit more than I ever intended representing the town of West. So I appreciate this community and surrounding communities for all your help and support during that time. But I'm excited. I'm ready to talk. This has been a great session. Thank you all for being here.
Then the guy at the end, I call him a redshirt freshman because he kind of got a chance to peek over there behind the veil before he actually got sworn in. No, I don't mean like that. No. John, your thoughts on the session?
Well, I think that the session went very well. I was fortunate in that I was appointed to several very good committees, appropriations, and higher ed, and house administration. As a freshman, I think those were probably the top appointments of any freshman this session. I agree with my compadres here. We did a lot of things that were good for the state of Texas. First of all, we stayed within the budget. And we didn't have to go and raise taxes or spend more than we had, which we can't do anyway. I think that higher education is in good shape, and public education is in better shape than it was at the end of last session. I'm just pleased that I had a part of that. I had a tremendous learning experience serving on the Appropriations Committee. That was probably the hardest work I did the whole session. It started early in the morning about 7 o'clock and went, as Senator Schwerdner served on that same committee last year as a freshman in the House. And it went till session started in the morning and started again after session was over and went till dark 30. It was a wonderful experience. I had Drew Darby, served on his subcommittee, and quite a mentor to me, and I appreciate that. Also, I want to thank each of you for being here in the chamber for sponsoring this event. I had a lot of fun talking to Scott through on Thursday mornings
yeah,
for 6-7 months. He harassed me quite a bit about the $40 a night motel.
You told the story, not me. Thank you. Before we get started with the session, we probably should take this opportunity to congratulate Senator Schwerdner because he was named Freshman Senator by Texas Monthly this year. So congratulations. Of course, it is Texas Monthly.
I was also a courageous conservative by the Texas Conservative Caucus.
Okay, there you go. All right, that balances out. There are business people here today, Senator. Obviously,
yes.
What is going to happen with the Affordable Care Act is something that we're all concerned about. We already know that Texas wants to opt out of this. There's not a plan that should have been in place back in January. Doctors have been told that they will be getting paid at the same rate as Medicare when they see Medicaid patients, but we don't have those things in place. Where is Texas as far as health care is concerned from your standpoint?
Well, I think the members of the audience, I appreciate the question, need to understand that health care and health care costs are the driving issue of budgets, both at the federal level as well as the state level. In the state of Texas, health care costs are, this last session, out of a budget of $194 billion, are $58 billion, 30%. In 2001, they were only 14% of the state budget. So everything we talk about, higher ed, education, criminal justice, transportation, you got to realize that because of the squeeze that's occurring with health care costs, the other aspects of the budget are getting the short end of the stick. Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, was passed March 2009. It's a very complex law, but it has a number of major provisions. One is it has employer mandates and individual mandates. It also has defined benefit packages, and then also tries to increase access to care by expanding Medicaid and setting up insurance exchanges, which are partially helped by the individuals to purchase health care by subsidies. Those are all things you maybe read about in the paper. The most pertinent issue to the state of Texas is Medicaid expansion. Because of the Roberts ruling, the Supreme Court ruling, states have the option to not expand Medicaid because it would be seen as coercive to federalism and states' rights. A lot of states are not expanding Medicaid primarily because of four reasons. And that's what the legislature did. We did not expand Medicaid. We decided a conscious decision to not expand Medicaid. In fact, we went the opposite way. We said that the legislature must give explicit permission before any expansion of a non-covered population were to occur. The reasons we didn't expand it are, number one, Medicaid is currently broken. And without the flexibility of reforming Medicaid to where it is efficient and cost-effective and right for the citizens of Texas, I personally didn't feel appropriate that we should expand a system that's already broken in the form it is. The second thing is costly. The federal deficits and debts that we see are piling up, and we supposedly have an agreement with the federal government that if we were to expand it, it would be a 90-10 proposition into perpetuity. I don't think that's going to occur. I don't think the federal government, with the finances that we're in from a federal standpoint, will continue with that end of the bargain. And the third thing is, do we want to expand the population of Medicaid, which is designed to take care of the aged, blind, disabled, and pregnant women and children, to a population that is well, able-bodied, childless adults, single adults, that, in my opinion, should be out looking for a job and working rather than becoming dependent and indolent on the backs of state government. And then fourth, this is kind of new information, this has already been tried. In Oregon, Medicaid was expanded to that population, able-bodied, childless adults. And then this was in 2008 when they had a little extra money in Oregon. And they had enough to expand about 5,000 people, and then 5,000 people didn't get Medicaid. And they looked at the health outcomes. And the parameters of health outcomes, as measured by hypertension, cholesterol, and diabetes, were not improved in that expansion group. And that's very interesting when you're going to expand something, saying you're improving health, but actually what was published in the New England Journal of Medicine in the Oregon Health Experiment shows that it doesn't work. And why is that? Why is that? Well, primarily because health is determined by individual conscious choices of how we live our lifestyle. And so those are the four major reasons. And various legislators chose various reasons not to expand. I think all four of them are valid arguments. We did a lot of, so that was one of the major topics. I can touch on women's health or mental health, but I don't want to hog all the time.
Well, no, we don't. But and I want to, at this point, from the Medicaid standpoint, if you two have any comments, I'd like for you to give them now, because I do want to move on to behavioral and female issues.
From our constituents, especially across the state and District 12, we did not want an expansion of Medicaid. Now, very blessed to have Dr. Schwertner to visit with across the aisle, and Dr. Zerwas and Dr. Bonin. We're blessed to have many doctors and nurses in the House and Senate. So from my standpoint, I can't touch on that, but I'm so honored that we're had his expertise to bounce those ideas off.
Certainly. John?
I just think that the biggest problem is the cost. We can't continue to bear that burden and do the other things that people expect the state of Texas to provide. The cost, the growth in Medicaid has been so rapid that it's going to eat up our entire budget if we don't watch out.
Sure. And then quickly, but based on your experience, obviously, Texas became in the forefront, in the national spotlight, for the wrong reasons, I'm sure, and a very hot issue with abortion. So where do you see women's health issues in Texas in the coming years?
Well, I'd like to term it pro-life issues.
Okay.
The women's health is multifactorial. We greatly increased funding to vital and necessary women's health preventive services in the state of Texas, and we have set up our own Texas Women's Health Program when the federal government decided not to continue the funding of the federal women's health program. So I think that's a very important thing, because those dollars that are put into preventive health services for women, unplanned pregnancies, diagnosis of cancer at an early stage, that pays dividends longer term. So that's an important issue that was addressed this session. In fact, we put in more money than we took out last session, significantly more money in women's health preventive services in various programs. In reference to pro-life issues, I believe that it is important to the citizens of Texas, to a large number of them, I think the majority of citizens of Texas, that we advance the protections of the unborn at 5 months of gestational age. Those children are highly developed if you look at pictures and understand gestation. And I believe that it is appropriate for the states, as allowed by Roe versus Wade, to make those decisions. And I think a number of states have already done so. That was one provision of the bill. In addition, that bill that was passed finally in the second legislative session allowed for some protections in reference to women seeking abortion services. Abortion providers have had some notorious issues in Pennsylvania. Dr. Gosnell, who was running a clinic up there, that was unsanitary and was actually killing fetuses that were born and after they were born. And then also the same thing was supposedly occurring in Houston. So I think it was appropriate for the state legislature to act when we see these things occurring nationwide to make sure that women, when they do receive those services after a very difficult decision being made, do so in a very sanitary, appropriate facility.
Let's turn to public education, Representative Cassell. House Bill 5, one of the things that the Legislative Action Committee wanted was, first of all, to get the $5.4 billion reestablished in the education fund. House Bill 5 brought that back, but also some other changes that came along with it. Talk to us
a little
bit about that.
You know, we're very blessed to have a lot of school children visit, and I was amazed. They wanted to end all the testing. Not all of them, but the magnitude that these kids have, the anxiety, you know, and the teachers as well. They don't have the ability to teach because they're always preparing for test after test after test. So I was very excited about HB 5 slowing down, taking a lot of the testing out, giving the teachers opportunity to teach, and then also the vocational and technical paths. We have been on a college curriculum course for a few years, and now these kids have opportunities and vocational and technical opportunities, especially, you know, in this area. There's thousands of jobs available for technical that we've done a disservice to our children, tell them that it's not a good thing to be an electrician or a plumber. And I know Doc and a few attorneys out there can testify. I love that joke where the plumber charges the attorney $750, and he goes, "I don't even make that much." He goes, "I didn't make that much when I was a doctor either."
I didn't know he brought shtick.
We're going to credit Ben for that. He started us on the right foot. But I mean, just giving our kids more opportunities to learn, more paths. I mean, HB 5 was significant, and putting back some of the money was huge, and we've got a lot more work to do. We're still waiting on a court case on to help finance the rest of education. But like I said, very successful session. Honored to be there. Obviously, a little longer than I ever intended, but
certainly
very happy with the results.
John, let me ask you to touch on this. I mean, it ends up that we're in the courthouse steps every time we talk about funding for public education. Is there ever going to be anything, in your view, that can work to keep us out of the courthouse?
Well, I think we made a good headway in that because all the money that we're giving goes into the formula. So the increase in money that the education that was appropriated for education is through the formula. So I think that goes to making it more equal, and that's the problem that the court has always had. So hopefully, yes, but you never know what happens when you go to the courthouse. It, you know, it can be bad.
All right, any thoughts, Senator?
I think there should be a discussion when you talk about it, public education, about what it takes to educate a child in the state of Texas. If you look at various states, Iowa does it for 6,000 and change, but Washington, D.C. and New York are 18,000. Here in the state of Texas, it's 8,000 something. There is a number that is necessary and insufficient. But above that, do we need to be putting that money directly into public education? Does it breed waste or inappropriateness as far as the running of our independent school districts? So that's a question. You know, I certainly believe that there was a reason and an increased need for public education funding this time, and I voted for that. But I also think at the same time we should always have a discussion in reference to what it takes to have a public student educated in the state of Texas.
Sure.
And that's where we should start the discussion rather than just saying more money, more money, more money.
Okay. Representative Rainey, I think maybe it was before we went on the air in your first week, I said, how's appropriations? I think he said he was drinking like drinking out of a fire hose. You had to take on a lot. But now that this first session is finished, tell us what you think is important that the Texas legislature has done to help small business in Texas.
Well, I think that probably the big issue is with small business has always been the margins tax or the franchise tax, which it really is. And maybe the way that businesses are categorized, some seem to think that they were categorized inappropriately, and their franchise tax has jumped considerably. I think we addressed some of those needs during the session. We actually ended up cutting some of the franchise tax cost, and hopefully that will help small business. Small business has issues that large business never has. And you and I were talking a few minutes ago about a livable wage that was brought up. A livable wage, to me, is a good way of causing more unemployment. There are some people that are not trained for anything, and if you bump up the minimum wage, what you've done is you put them out of a job. And we surely don't want to do that. We want to do everything we can to encourage employment, and small business is where that usually takes place.
Let's turn our attention for a minute to water, Representative Cassell. Again, you have an interesting district because you've got some urban and you've got some rural, and obviously use of a finite amount of water is very important. Tell me what you feel like the legislature was able to accomplish as far as water was concerned.
I'm glad we accomplished something there for a while. It didn't look good. We'll lead with water. I want you all to go to the Texas Water Development Board. On November 5th, we have an opportunity to pass Proposition 6, which will fund our state water plan for the first time, and that's the legislation that we passed. We're giving you all and us an opportunity to vote on it to utilize $2 billion from the Economic Stabilization Fund, otherwise known as the Rainy Day Fund. But I think it's more important to call it the Economic Stabilization Fund, because how are we going to stabilize this growing economy that Dr. Schwartner talked about if we don't have water for all these folks and businesses moving to Texas? We're going to be in trouble. So we're going to create a SWIFT account, put $2 billion to fund a $50 billion water plan over the next 50 years. These will be low-interest loans to counties, projects all around the state that are in dire need. As we look at my district, Cossey, Marlin, and West, that have water infrastructure issues, we've all been on the receiving end of some of these early legislation, and it's been very helpful. I mean, just on a conservation side, Cossey, Marlin, and West had 20-30% loss every month on their water. I mean, that's just ridiculous, but those pipes are lead and put in the 30s, so we're going to need your help to fund the water infrastructure. We will have an opportunity to build a reservoir here and there, but you know, people get confused that it's about, you know, private property rights taking over land and starting to build reservoirs. That's going to be very difficult. And the infrastructure is where we're going to put this money to help small towns conserve and find, and that'll give us a better idea of where our water, our science on our water and our aquifers is. So it's going to be very important to pass that on November 5th, and I hope to help you get educated. Don't hesitate to call any of our offices. Study it. We'll be there to help our staff. I think we were supposed to introduce our teams that are here with us today.
We will at the end.
And I
yep,
forgot
we
that.
Will.
But, I mean, we're blessed. All three of us. We work in conjunction every day. But water is the key. Without water, there goes our economy, there goes our schools, there goes our roads. So very important.
Share something with you. The Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, TCEQ, in July notified the city of Waco and dozens of other Brazos Basin water users they would have to curtail the use of the water that they got out of the river and allow it to flow downstream to Dow Chemical's facility in Freeport, Texas, because of a contract that they entered into in 1942. 1942, so 70 years ago, and now that's making it tough upriver. But these are the kind of laws that we have in place, and that's why water is a pretty important thing. Senator?
Yes, those are senior water rights, but they should be interruptible for in times of drought to make sure that municipalities and I actually authored a letter to CEQ to try to keep Dow from doing that. I think it's important that we revisit water rights, but more importantly, we need to make sure that we have infrastructure development, and we did that this session. Water infrastructure, transportation infrastructure, as well as our human resources, our educational infrastructure. I think this was a very successful session in all regards there.
Kyle, if you would speak just for a moment, touch on the Brazos Valley Groundwater Conservation District. This has been a situation where Brazos and Robertson County are sharing wells. It hasn't always been the best of situations, but let's talk about how that is
now. Our new leadership, we're getting along better. And when I run through my district, we spent last night in Bremont and Robertson County, we touched on this, but Falls and Limestone County have no district. They're standing alone. So this district is important. We're in the Region G Water District as well. This is all going to be huge once we pass this water development to help make sure all these counties are covered and have the opportunity to have water infrastructure. But there is a lot of water. We are sure there's a lot of water in the Carrizo-Wilcox underneath Brazos-Robertson County, but this is one of the fastest growing areas, and we need to be able to protect that water for our citizens as well.
The third 300-pound gorilla in the room would be transportation. This is something that obviously they finally got through in the final session. But talk a little bit, Senator, if you would, about the final proposal, what has happened as far as the ceiling and the floor on the rainy day fund, and how that funding takes place.
Well, as we discussed, transportation is one of the critical infrastructure needs of the state to keep our economy humming. We spend $9 to $10 billion every year on transportation. TxDOT says we need 40% more than that, $4 billion more dollars. I'm not in 100% agreement with that, but I do believe we do need increased appropriations for transportation. And we did that a number of ways this session. One was by passing a supplemental appropriation bill that had $450 million in it for the shale counties that have been so affected on their county roads by the oil and gas exploration that's occurring and development that's occurring there. Another way we did it was redirecting money that was DPS, that was Fund 6 money, transportation fund money, going to DPS. That was $400 million. That's also now going just strictly to build roads and maintain roads. And the last one, which is what an issue of the special session, was a rededication of some of the money, oil and gas excise tax, that flows up to the rainy day fund, a portion of it, half of it, going to Fund 6 or transportation. There was a vigorous discussion of how much of that should be allocated, a third or a half, and then at what time, of what floor level of our rainy day funding, our savings account, should we turn that off and rededicate that money to refilling our savings account to make sure that we're in the strongest financial shape possible. The state of Texas is the only state in the nation that has $1 billion or more in their rainy day or savings account. And we started this session with over $8 billion in our rainy day account. I was a proponent of a strong constitutional floor put in our Constitution to where we know for certain that it's going to be X when we turn it off. The way we did it was we allowed the legislature through a select committee to decide that floor. And that's going to be decided on by this select committee of 10 each session. I'm okay with that as long as there's fairly physically prudent individuals on that committee. My concern was long term, without it being in the Constitution, what that would entail if you were to have that select committee appointed by someone that believes that we should drain every penny from the rainy day fund. So I voted against that initially in reference to the floor issue. I voted for transportation, direct appropriation from the rainy day fund as a pay-as-you-go method, which would have appropriated in the Senate budget at least $2.9 billion, which would have saved $3.7 in interest in long term. That was a direct appropriation. Other ways you can do it is raise fees, tax more, vehicle registration, and then what we've been doing recently is tolls and long-term bonds or bonding through Prop 12. That to me is just passing the buck. I'd rather do it in a different manner. And I think the rededication was an appropriate manner, but I would have liked to have had a stronger floor.
John, it took the third special session. Things were pretty contentious on the House side. First, you couldn't get enough bodies in there to be able to get the vote done, and we already talked about that on the radio. But the idea of it, talk about what it was like in the House and what it took to get enough members in there to get this thing passed and finally get it out to the people.
Well, I'm sure it took a lot of phone calls, but the primary obstacle was the floor. And it appeared that you had to have 100 votes to pass this legislation because it was going to be a constitutional amendment. So we had some Democrats that didn't like the floor being set at a fixed rate. So we had to adjust that, and I think that's why we came to the conclusion that we did. The only problem I have with this bill is that it is not a long-term solution. What we have done is we've taken from the severance tax, which, as everybody that lives in Texas knows, all businesses goes up and it comes down. It's been doing that for all of our lives. I expect it's going to go down again at some point. Well, when that happens, we're not going to have any money to put into transportation. So at some point, we're going to have to face how we're going to handle that with a dedicated source of revenue. And who knows how that's going to end up. But it has to be done at some point.
Okay, now part of this plan also is that TxDOT has to find savings. This is an organization that couldn't locate $1 billion a couple of years ago. They couldn't find it. It was in a file cabinet or something. But, I mean, that's a concern, too, that you're asking austerity from these people, and they need to get their house in order.
Well, I think that was a good move. We probably need to be looking at every state organization, state department, and say, hey, you need to be looking at how you handle your money. We do in our homes, so you need to be doing that with our tax dollars. And I think that was a good move.
Yes, the finding of new revenue, again, plays into this bigger picture of the budget in totality and the ever-increasing portion of that budget that's dedicated to health care through Medicaid. And you might say, well, this is cut Medicaid. Well, you can't because it's federally it's a federal entitlement. And if you're going to participate, you got to participate 100%. So if they meet eligibility requirements and certain aspects that you have to fund that Medicaid bill. And so that's the keystone to figuring out money for transportation and money for schools and money for criminal justice is getting a hold of the health care costs. And that's not just in Texas, that's across our nation. You see that played out nationally about how and what level of care should be given are dedicated to a certain segment of our population.
Well, we've got four of the 11 largest cities in America in Texas, Kyle. None of them are in your district, but what we like is the idea that people from rural areas come to Brazos County and spend money. That's a good thing. All of our businesses like that. So from the standpoint of being a basically rural representative, what does this transportation funding mean for your constituency?
It's huge. It helps get people through the counties, gets them to Houston, Dallas, San Antonio, Waco, Brian.
I think you stop in Bryan and spend some Bryan College Station, spend money first.
We were fortunate to be in Bremont last night and visiting with Franklin and Cossie and Calvert and Hearn as well, their chambers of commerce, and they're trying to figure out how to capitalize on the success of Texas A&M and football weekends as well as people travel. So, you know, alternate routes, good. I mean, people are, as we had these transportation issues, I mean, if you've traveled any this summer, you know certain roads are in not good shape. And, you know, I told him, I said, you need to start touting Highway 14, because if you're coming out of Dallas, it's a nice road, it's in good shape, and you get to hit Mahia, Grosbeck, Cossie, Thornton, and Bremont. So it covers about five or six of my favorite little cities in District 12.
And that's what it's all about. Let's turn our attention to higher education. John, Texas A&M, the tuition revenue bonds did not happen. They may yet before it's all said and done, but tell us how Texas A&M and its system fared in your view.
I think all higher education did very well, and Texas A&M, of course, did well. Just a couple of pieces of legislation that I handled for A&M. One of them was the city's sales tax, hotel motel tax, that's going to help us keep football games here, which is going to help our community. We were able to get that through with the help of my colleagues here. We also did a couple of things on campus. One of them was we are going to allow them to sell or lease property over there on the main campus. That had been restricted by a bill that Bill Moore had passed back, who knows, in the 70s probably, and only university in the state that had that restriction. And one of the things that that A&M is going to do, they're going to redo all the court arms at one time, and they'll be able to contract that out, and then the revenues from the rental on the court arms will pay that back and pay the contractor. So that was a good move and saves them money. Looked at such things as the concealed carry thing, and people can go on campus and leave their guns and ammunition in their trunk. They can't get it out, but they can have it in their trunk without being a problem. Those were some of the things that we did. I was very disappointed that we didn't have tuition revenue bonds. I was hoping that we would because of the biotechnical lab that was going to be added to the veterinary diagnostic lab and was going to bring big things to Bryan College Station. Hopefully, either next session or maybe in a special session, which I hope we don't have, we will be able to tackle that again.
But there could be a call, right? It could happen at any time. Is that right, Senator?
Certainly, the governor has the option at any time to call a special session. usually, that's not done until after a primary election, right, would be the likeliest time frame. But TRBs is one thing, and as well as the TWIA issue that's still outstanding. A&M did very well, as John said. I'm proud of the Center for Innovation and Advancements in Development and Manufacturing, CIADM. That's a big win for the Brazos Valley in long term. That could be a game changer for an area that already is the epicenter of growth and prosperity of the state of Texas, which is, again, the epicenter of the nation. We're living here in the sweetest of sweet spots, and we should all be very thankful for that.
As an elected official, what would you say to our business leaders in the Chamber of Commerce as to how they should be active and get the word out to legislators in Austin?
Well, I personally like to talk to them one-on-one about what's affecting their business. I think I have a pretty good idea. They want to have fair and consistent regulation. They want low taxation. They want good roads, good schools, and good workforce, and then let government get out of the way. But if there are specific issues to your industry, I'm proud and be happy to hear from you directly about something that I might do as a state legislator.
Sure. Kyle, anything that we didn't necessarily cover today that you'd like to share?
I think we hit on all the high spots. We did very well. I'm with these two gentlemen. I'm wanting TRBs to be back. I don't want to necessarily go back to Austin, but I'm very optimistic. But I have this feeling that I'll get to drive over to Austin with John here very soon in March after the primary.
Okay. John, any other thoughts?
Well, the only thing I can say again about higher education, one of the things that we're missing is trade schools and vocational training. And I suspect the folks from Blinn are here. I know that Blinn is a very big part of that, and hopefully we'll be training people to run the pharmaceutical labs. All the things are going to be happening. I just think that we have a very bright future with education, higher education in Bryan and College Station. We're going to have 25,000 engineering students by the year 25. Well, what will that do to all of the retailers here in this community, all of the home builders, the apartments? It's just going to be fantastic. There's nothing but blue sky. I mean, we're going to have the best weather here in Bryan College Station you can think of with growth. And I think you can all be prepared for that.
Of course, all these members have staff and offices available. If you want to be in touch with your elected officials, I feel fortunate I'm able to talk to them while their bodies are in session. But if you would, John, you have staff here, or how do they get in touch with your office?
Well, we have an office here in Bryan. It's just north of Luby's. There's a big sign on Texas Avenue. You can't miss it. It's on the right. Elizabeth Miller, would you stand up? Elizabeth is my district director. Thank you, Elizabeth. Is Carolyn still here, or did she have to go? Carolyn Curtis is an intern with us in the office here. Anna Hines, would you please stand? Anna is my chief of staff in Austin. And Good Schiller.
You better not forget Miranda.
Miranda is the lifeblood of our office. She's full of life. She also was a big help with me in appropriations. She had worked in that committee last session with Myra Crownover, and Miranda is a special person in our office and keeps us all going. She's got life. The rest of us kind of run like this, and she kicks us in the rear end.
Kyle, you have staff here?
More importantly, she's a constituent from Roberts County. I'm blessed today. Tara, my chief of staff, is not able to be here, and most of y'all know our district director, Jason Reynolds. He's actually in Marlin at a water meeting. So today I have our legislative director, our two LDs, Ryan Skrbacek and Jared Azapardi, are here with us today. And thank you, guys.
Senator?
Thank you. Yeah. Leo Alexander is my district director. And Hayden Paul, is he in the room? Good. And he also works in the district representing the Brazos Valley region. And then Jeff Claybrook is the Aggie intern. I'd also like to mention that Kyle and I have adjoining offices there in the Wells Fargo Bank building.
Right. Yeah.
I set mine up and got it started in February to hit the ground running, and as well as Congressman Flores. So if you need a political issue addressed, the Wells Fargo Bank building is where you go.
We refer to it as the Central Complaint Center.
There you go. That's it. Clint, Caldwell Companies, thank you so much, and thank you for being here. Gentlemen, thank you for your time.